Track 16. Mary's agonizing goodbyes to Jesus. Holy Thursday and the Eucharist.
It is a sultry afternoon of the day before Holy Thursday. After giving a long and thundering speech in Jerusalem, Jesus comes to the garden of a nearby friendly house with his apostles and encourages them to eat, although all he wants is rest. Maria Valtorta writes, "Kind and gentle is the arrival of the mother near her son. Of the other women disciples, all the Hebrew ones are there, and of the Romans, only Valeria is present." They stop for a little while and are silent, in order not to awaken the disciples who are now sleeping. Mary cautiously approaches her son, who, overcome by weariness, has fallen asleep with his head on the stone table, his left arm as a cushion under his face. Mary sits patiently near her exhausted son. She contemplates him so intently, and a sorrowful, loving smile appears on her lips, while tears noiselessly fall on her lap. Her hands are joined, held tight with fingers interlaced, and shaken by a light tremor. It is the mother who is watching her son, the last sleep of her son she can watch. Jesus moves, and Mary quickly wipes her eyes, but Jesus has only changed the position of his face. But something breaks Mary's heart. She hears her Jesus weep in his sleep and whisper the name of Judas with an indistinct murmur. Mary stands up, approaches her son, and bends over him. She follows his vague whispering with her hands pressed against her heart. Jesus is dreaming once again of the present, the past, and also of the future, until he awakes with a jerk, as if he wanted to escape something horrible. But he finds the breast of his mother, the arms of his mother, the smile of his mother, the gentle voice of his mother, her kiss, her caress, and the light touch of her veil with which she had wiped her face to dry tears and perspiration. All the while, she says to him, "You were in an uncomfortable position and you were dreaming. You are wet with perspiration and tired, son." She tidies his ruffled hair. She dries his face and kisses him, embracing him with her arm, holding him to her heart. Jesus smiles at her, saying, "You are always the mother, the one who comforts, the one who rewards for everything, my mother." He makes her sit close to him, laying his hand on her knees. And Mary takes his long hand, so gentle and yet so strong, the hand of a handicraftsman, in her small ones. She caresses his fingers and the back of his hand. Mary then says, "We are all here, also Valeria." "Where are the women disciples?" asks Jesus. "Over there, at the entrance to the garden." Mary stops because her voice trembles. "Mother, when you are all alone, whom will you stay with?" "With whomsoever you will tell me, son. I obeyed you, son, before having you. I will continue doing so after you have left me." Her voice trembles again, but an heroic smile is on her lips. They talk some more. The women disciples come to give Jesus some food and water, and he says goodbye to them one at a time. Then he says to them all, "Grace begins already to descend, grace and forgiveness on woman, through this blessing of mine. Go." He dismisses them, holding back his mother, to whom he says, "Before evening I shall be at Lazarus's mansion. I need to see you again. John will be with me, but I only want you, mother, and the other Marys, Martha and Susanna. And I am so tired." Mary says, "We shall be the only ones. Goodbye, son." They kiss each other and part. Mary goes away slowly. She turns round before going out. She turns round before leaving the little bridge. She turns again as long as she can still see Jesus. She seems unable to depart from him. Mary and some of the women disciples have now arrived at the house of the supper room where the Passover is to be consumed, in accordance with the centuries-old Jewish custom. Maria Valtorta writes, "In the room that I see now, there is Mary with other women. I recognize the Magdalene and Mary, the mother of the apostles James and Judas Thaddeus and their brother Simon. A woman and a man have rushed there upon their arrival, and they are full of attention for and of respectful familiarity with Mary, who looks worn out and aged. She is very sad, although she smiles kindly. She is very pale, and her movements are tired and hesitating, like those of a person preoccupied in thought. Jesus comes in. I can see that it is getting dark, and he is with all the apostles. He greets the landlord with his usual salutation, 'Peace to this house.' And while the apostles go down to the supper room, he enters the room where Mary is. The pious women greet him with deep respect and then go away, closing the door and leaving mother and son free. Jesus embraces his mother and kisses her forehead. Mary first kisses the hand of her son and then his right cheek. Jesus makes Mary sit down and sits beside her. 'Mother, I have come to get strength and comfort from you. I am like a little baby, mother, who needs the heart of his mother for his grief and his mother's breast for his strength. Among those who more or less love me, you are the only one who knows how to pray in this hour. You know how to pray and to understand. The others are concerned with the festivity. They are engrossed in joyful thoughts or in criminal thoughts, while I am suffering from so many things. The hosannas of a few days ago have intoxicated them. Mother, I have come for this hour, and from a supernatural point of view, it is a joy to see it arrive. But my ego is also afraid of it, because this chalice bears the name of betrayal, abjuration, ferocity, blasphemy, and abandonment. Support me, Mother, as when with your prayers you drew the Spirit of God upon yourself. Draw now upon your Son the strength that may help me to accomplish the deed for which I came. Mother, goodbye. Bless me, Mother, also on behalf of the Father. And forgive everybody. Let us forgive together, as from this moment. Let us forgive those who torture us." While speaking, Jesus has slid down on his knees at the feet of his mother. Mary weeps silently. Then she bends, kisses his hair and caresses it. She caresses his shoulders and arms. She takes his face in her hands, turns it towards herself and presses it to her heart. She cuddles that poor tired head as if he were a baby. She only says, "Son, Jesus, my Jesus," but in such a voice that it breaks my heart. Then Jesus stands up. He adjusts his mantle, remains standing in front of his mother, who is still weeping, and he blesses her. Then he turns his steps towards the door, and before going out he says to her, "Mother, I will come again before consuming my Passover. Pray while waiting for me." And he goes out. Maria Valtorta describes the scene of later that evening. Jesus is in the supper room with his apostles, the Passover rituals having been completed, and he says, "Now that the old rite has been accomplished, I will celebrate the new one. I have promised you a miracle of love. It is time to work it. That is why I have longed for this Passover. From now on, this is the victim that will be consumed in a perpetual rite of love. My beloved friends, I have loved you throughout the whole life of the earth. I have loved you for the whole eternity, my children, and I want to love you till the end. There is nothing greater than this. Bear that in mind. I am going away, but we shall remain forever united through the miracle that I will now work." Jesus takes a loaf, still unbroken, and places it on the chalice that has been filled with wine. He blesses and offers both. He then breaks the bread, takes 13 morsels of it, and gives one to each apostle, saying, "Take this and eat it. This is my body. Do this in remembrance of me who am going away." He then gives the chalice and says, "Take this and drink it. This is my blood. This is the chalice of the new alliance, in my blood and through my blood, that will be shed for you to remit your sins and give you the life. Do this in remembrance of me." Jesus is very sad. There is no smile, no trace of light, no colour on his face. It is already an agonising face. The apostles look at him, utterly anguished. Jesus stands up, saying, "Do not move, I shall be back at once." He takes the 13th morsel of bread and the chalice, and he goes out of the supper room. "He is going to his mother," whispers John. And Judas Thaddeus says with a sigh, "Poor woman." Peter asks in a very low voice, "Do you think she knows?" "She knows everything," says John. "She has always been aware of everything." They all speak in very low voices, as if they were in front of a corpse. "But do you think so, really?" asks Thomas, who does not want yet to believe. "And do you doubt it? It is his hour," replies James of Zebedee. "May God grant us strength to be faithful," says the zealot. Peter is about to speak, but John, who is on the lookout, says, "Silence, he is here." Jesus comes back in. He has the empty chalice in his hands. Only at the bottom there is a trace of wine, and in the light of the chandelier it looks just like blood. Judas Iscariot, in front of whom is the chalice, looks at it as if he were enchanted. Then he averts his eyes. Jesus watches him and shudders, and John, leaning as he is on Jesus' chest, feels it. Judas Iscariot leaves the supper room, Jesus telling him, "What is still to be done elsewhere, do it quickly." There is some dead silence. Then shortly afterwards, Jesus tells his apostles that they can't go where he is going. He then says, "Think of my mother. Neither can she come where I am going. And yet I left the Father to come to her and become Jesus in her immaculate womb. And yet I came from the inviolate woman in the bright ecstasy of my birthday, and I was nourished with her love that became milk. I am made of purity and love because Mary nourished me with her virginity and by the perfect love who lives in heaven. And yet I have grown up through her, costing her fatigue and tears. And yet I ask of her such heroism as no one has ever accomplished, and in comparison the heroism of Judith and that of Jael are the heroisms of poor women quarrelling at the village fountain. And yet no one loves me as she does. And notwithstanding all that, I will leave her and go where she will come only after a long time. The commandment I give you, sanctify yourselves year by year, month by month, day by day, hour by hour, to be able to come to me when it is your hour, does not apply to her. She is full of grace and holiness. She is the creature who has had everything and has given everything. There is nothing to be added or to be taken away. She is the most holy witness of what God can do." Jesus gives us many teachings on the Eucharist. Here is one of them. He says, "Love me as Eucharist. The Eucharist is the heart of God. It is my heart. I gave you my heart at the Last Supper. I always give it to you, provided you want it. You will not conceive the Christ in yourselves and give birth to him unless you are able to make his heart live in you. When in a woman's womb a child is formed, what is formed first of all? The heart. So it is with the life of the Spirit. You will not give the Christ unless you form his heart in yourselves by loving the Eucharist, which is life and true life, and by loving as my mother loved me, just conceived. Oh, what caresses through her virginal flesh she gave for me, formless and tiny, who quivered in her with my little embryonic heart. Oh, what pulsations through the dark recesses of the organism I communicated to her heart from the depths of that living tabernacle where I took shape to be born and die for you, crucifying the heart of my mother at my own cross for your sakes." In another dictation, Jesus says, "If Eucharist means communion, Mary lived Eucharistically nearly all her life. For I was in my mother before being in the world as a man. Nor, when I was no longer a man in the world, did I cease to be in her. We have never separated since the moment when obedience was sanctified up to the height of God, and I became flesh in her womb, so pure that the angels are less pure in comparison, and so holy that no ciborium receiving me has such holiness. Only in the breast of God is there a perfection of holiness greater than that of Mary. After the triune God, she is the holy of holies." Azaria, Maria's guardian angel, speaks of the Eucharist. "I, an angel, want you to know what we think in gazing at the Son and the Mother, the Son who has become bread, and the Mother, blessed, on whom you feed as well as feeding on him. Yes, God nourishes you with pure wheat flour. She has become flour. It is not just an expression. Out of love for you, out of love for men, she immolated herself. She was reduced to dust between the millstones of obedience and pain. She was the intact one whom marriage, childbirth, and death were unable to affect, violate, or reduce to dust, as with every mortal. Love delivered her to the millstone, where she became the co-redemptrix, changing from an ear of wheat into wheat flour. The Son said, "If the grain does not die, it does not later become an ear." What mortal, more than Mary, the one not destined to die, has been able to die to self and to personal affections, to give you the bread of life? She, who did not know death, has tasted all the deaths of renunciations to give you the rich fruit of the Saviour and Redeemer. Later, as the mother, she raised him for you with the best of herself, with her virginal milk. Therefore, still with her blood, which gave motion to the heart beating for God alone and turned into maternal love, she raised him for you with her warmth, with her care, and with all the honey drawn from the intact rock, rising high towards heaven, kissed by the God Son. And finally, she gave him to you to eat, flavoured not only by the honey of her love, but also by the salt of her weeping.